Trevor Bauer was spotted in the dugout during Monday's game against the Royals wearing boxing gloves, just in case Yordano Ventura tried to start something. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, powered by DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-day fantasy baseball site. Use the promo code DVR to get a free contest entry today with a first-time deposit on DraftKings. It's the evening of Tuesday, April 28th, 2015. I'm Adam Wolf, joined today by Clay Link. You can find Clay on Twitter at ClayWLink. You can find me on Twitter at Wolfman Tweets. And if you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher, and can please rate and review the podcast. Greatly appreciate any and all feedback that we can get. Clay, let's start it out with some big injury news that broke, I believe it was earlier today, regarding Jed Lowrie. He's diagnosed with a ligament tear in his right thumb, which will require surgery and sideline him until after the All-Star break. A really tough break for a guy that got off to a really nice start for the Astros, one of the few guys in that lineup that's actually hitting up to expectations right now. But with his absence, obviously a big void to fill for the Astros in the middle of the lineup. Looks like somebody like Marwin Gonzalez or Jonathan Villar would be the leading candidates to get the nod at shortstop. But losing a guy of Lowrie's caliber is obviously probably the type of setback that a team like the Astros can ill afford.
Yeah, definitely. And they had been playing so well lately on the strength of Lowrie's play, too. And I think he was batting third, fourth for them on occasion. And I mean, this really puts them in a tough spot. I do think, you know, the contributions they've gotten from guys like Colby Rasmus and Jake Marisnyk have helped at the bottom of that order, but really a void at the top half now. And, you know, you mentioned Marwin Gonzalez, Jonathan Villar. Marwin Gonzalez got the start today, but I still think, you know, if you were to target one of these two in an AL only, that's probably really the extent of where you'd consider them. I'd probably have to give VR a slight edge here. I mean, I know he's struggled at the major league level for the most part, but pretty good track record in the upper levels of the minors. Parts of three seasons at AAA, 273, 351 on base, 410 slug, has some speed. again, not sure how the playing time is going to break out, but I kind of feel like Gonzalez is better suited for a utility role, you know, could play multiple positions where VR, I think he's, you know, best suited for the majority of the playing time there. And if you're looking for cheap speed and have guys, batting average guys, so you can afford that hit, that drain that he's going to give you, I think he could be a nice source of cheap speed.
And I think it's those previous struggles that you alluded to with VR that kind of explain why the Astros actually had to go out and get Lowrie this offseason, just because VR was the leading candidate last season to take that shortstop job and just wasn't able to do it at the plate. Batted just 209 over 87 games with the Astros, roughly split his time between AAA Oklahoma City and the major league club, but has a shot at redemption right here. You know, like you said, the at-bats will break down between Marwin Gonzalez and VR, but a guy like Gonzalez doesn't really have the tools you'd like to look at a starting shortstop. At least with VR, he has game-changing speed, and, you know, that alone might make him an asset in fantasy.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, with Lowrie, oh, man, that's so tough. Not only because he was batting, you know, 300 to start the year, but he was actually, you know, slugging 567, had four doubles and four home runs as well. And, you know, it's going to be hard to know exactly how this lineup is going to shake out with VR in there. I think he, you know, might serve kind of as a second leadoff type at the bottom of the order. And you may probably stick with Altuve, Luis Valbuena, George Springer, Evan Gaddis, probably bump Colby Rasmus up to the five spot where he was today and yesterday as well. Then, you know, you got Carter Castro, Gonzalez there. And, of course, they've been playing in a in an NL park recently, so they're going to have, you know, the DH back available. I think Gaddis, you know, more than likely, you know, serves as the DH for the most part. And then Jake Marisnyk, who I mentioned, out of the lineup today, but he should be in line for, you know, close to everyday time as well. And I do think that VR probably second leadoff, but there's still some value to be had there. I think in AL only for now, and potentially could creep into the mix, deeper mix conversation eventually.
And Lowry, of course, wasn't the only injury, major injury that happened on Tuesday. As seems to be the case every day, it seems like there's, you know, a big name going down. And today was no exception. Masahiro Tanaka, it looks like, will be the latest victim to hit the disabled list. He was diagnosed with a forearm strain and tendonitis in his right wrist. According to Brian Cashman, doesn't really seem like it's something that's necessarily going to be easily resolved. That he was calling it a small strain, but at the same time, conservatively said that Tanaka would be out for at least a month. So not really a scenario where he's going to return in those 15 days. And you have to wonder if it might be a precursor to Tommy John surgery, which he chose to forego last season.
Yeah, there's kind of been some mixed signals on that front so far. I mean, they said that, you know, when Tanaka did go for the MRI on the forearm and on the wrist, you know, the wrist just showing tendonitis, but the small strain in the forearm, Cashman said, you know, couldn't even call it a grade one. That's how small the strain was. But at the same time, the MRI also showed that there were no changes in the forearm. But you got to think that, you know, given that there is still that small tear in the elbow ligament, this was probably an injury that has to do with him compensating for that elbow, you know, weakness, I guess you have to call it. And, you know, if this keeps going this way, I mean, there's always going to be these kind of injuries when you have to compensate for such a big injury. And I feel like, you know, while they have delayed Tommy John and they're saying that the elbow has shown no changes, there's still that issue with the elbow. And it may just be a matter of time before they ultimately decide that, hey, you know, we have this guy under contract for several more years. Let's just get this out of the way now and hope to get him back, you know, for the stretch run next year. That'd be tough for them to have to bite the bullet and go that route, but they may not have a choice if they decide that this injury really was to do with him compensating for this injury.
And I guess if there is a silver lining for fantasy owners, it's that Tanaka kind of came in at a built-in discount because of that pre-existing elbow inflammation that was hanging over his head. A lot of people thought it was just a matter of time before he broke down. And at this stage, it's too early to say that this will result, you know, in a major long-term injury for Tanaka beyond the month that Cashman was speculating. But at the same time, I was one of the fantasy owners that decided to, you know, take a discount on the chance that Tanaka would stay healthy all year. And, you know, the early returns were pretty encouraging, but doesn't look like that'll be the case. I'm a little bit worried right now, but I think at this point, you pretty much just have to hold him and hope that he gets better.
Yeah, I mean, the velocity ended up ticking up a decent amount with Tanaka. I mean, last year, averaged 91.2 miles per hour on the fastball. Got it up to 90.5 throughout the season. But, you know, at the same time, the swinging strike rate was down more than 3%. The line drive rate was also down significantly, but just did not look like the same guy. You know, wasn't able to, you know, use that splitter or use that fastball to really set up the splitter and, you know, achieve success. Had showed some encouraging signs, but in light of this, you know, a month-long absence probably he's looking at. I'd say you stash him if you can in deeper leagues if you have a DL spot, but, you know, if you're in a 12-teamer or if you just don't have DL spots, I think you're more than justified cutting bait at this point.
And for those in AL-only and deeper mixed leagues that are kind of spotlighting a potential replacement for Tanaka, it's kind of my impression that leading candidate will be Chase Whitley. The Yankees, before Tanaka's injury was announced, actually had Whitley make a spot start on Tuesday just to kind of give the rest of the rotation a break. So the fact that he's already up there, I think, maybe make him the leading candidate to replace Tanaka. But Tanaka's next turn in the rotation, I believe, was set to come, I think, Wednesday or Thursday. Wednesday. So that would require them to probably turn to another guy in their rotation. Is there any other names that you might think could potentially replace Tanaka?
You know, none that really jump out to me. Of course, they don't have a lot of depth with, you know, Chris Capuano, Ivan Nova on the DL, but just looking at, you know, their 40-man roster here, man, slim pickings. I don't know if they'd go with a guy like Esmiel Rogers. I really don't know. Maybe Justin Wilson. Not a lot to like there, but they're going to have to find something. Maybe it ends up being a bullpen tandem effort type of start for them on Wednesday. I would avoid him in daily and everything else, but you have to think that they're going to have to probably, I would think they might have to make a move to find a replacement if this ends up, you know, looking like more than a month for Tanaka.
Yeah, for nothing else, maybe just pursue a low-level arm just to restore some of that depth that's missing with some of those absences that you mentioned. But that's something that the Yankees will obviously have to decide whether or not they want to address in the coming days. But also in the AL East, a closer shakeup in Toronto. This one wasn't totally unexpected, considering that Miguel Castro had allowed a run in four of his last five appearances, and apparently that was enough for John Gibbons to give him the hook. Looks like the Blue Jays are going to go with Brett Cecil. Really a carousel right now to start the season for the Jays in the closer's role, and even though Cecil is now the guy, I'm not necessarily optimistic that there's not another change that's going to happen as the weeks and months progress.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cecil, you know, he was the guy that they wanted coming into the year, but I can maybe see them going back to Aaron Sanchez. I mean, the rotation move has not worked out well to this point. It's had some major control issues, really having issues, you know, working through the order multiple times. And I think he proved so good in that role last year that, you know, you may want to give him another chance. I think it's going to be a while before we see Miguel Castro back in there. I mean, the strikeout rate, not bad at 7.2 in 11 appearances, but you know, the 333 BABIP and, you know, the FIP was actually, you know, at 5.28, almost, you know, a run and a half higher than his ERA. And you mentioned that, you know, struggled to put up scoreless frames in his last four outings, was able to get a couple saves over that span. But, you know, the blown save and the loss yesterday was just too much. And I understand it. For a kid 20 years old, I think that, you know, throwing him into that role was probably a bit ill-conceived.
And even if it's not adding another closer, I think the Jays definitely need to do something to get some more high-quality arms in that bullpen. Because right now, when you're leaning on a guy like Castro, who barely has any experience in the higher levels of the minors, same case goes for Roberto Ozuna. I know he's, you know, generally performed pretty well so far, but I think you need to have a little bit of more guys that you can reliably depend on to fill out those seventh and eighth innings. And the Sanchez solution, I think, would be a great idea. I know we talked about his outing last night. He had a really nasty pitch that really buckled one of the hitters on the Red Sox. But at the same time, the inconsistency has been a theme outing to outing for Sanchez. But unlike last year when he was in that closer's role, he was one of the very best closers during that duration of his stay in that role. So you have to think that if the Jays can get depth in their rotation or the bullpen some way or the other, some changes on the horizon.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe Cecil does well and holds it down for a while, but I don't think it's going to be a permanent solution. And yeah, I think you're right that, you know, this is, you know, Sanchez to the bullpen again would probably be the best way to go. I mean, the starting rotation experiment has not worked. And you're right that down the stretch last year, he was one of the most dominant end gamers in all of baseball. And I think for fantasy purposes, if you're still holding on to Sanchez, you know, this is a pretty good sign that maybe his value is about to take a huge spike up, because right now it's kind of, you know, at the bottom of the barrel, not really a guy that you even need to own in 15 teamers. But if he were to move back into the bullpen, I mean, he'd be a must-own guy in all formats. And a guy who, you know, aside from Ozuna, who could be a decent secondary option, Aaron Loop, lefty, but really having success against both right-handed and left-handed hitters so far. Actually has been better against right-handers at this point. 466 OPS against so far against right-handers this season, 497 OPS against lefties. So very good against both sides. And the ERA is up at 5.40, but his whip is at 0.80. Has had, you know, some misfortune there. So I think you look at that ERA and you kind of got to brush it aside. 9-1 K to walk. I think he could be a decent option. Home runs may be a bit of an issue, but if you're really, really searching for saves, you may want to give him some consideration.
So that's a sleeper option just to take a look at in AL only leagues with Aaron Loop. And also we'll obviously update you if the Sanchez move to the bullpen does materialize. Right now, it's just kind of something that the reporters in Toronto are speculating, but would have to think that his value would take a huge jump if he were to land that role. But as far as the Dodgers go, really team that's been hit hard by injuries just in the last 2 days only. Latest injury that happened on Tuesday is related to Carl Crawford. He was diagnosed with a torn oblique and will be placed on the 15-day DL. The Dodgers haven't issued a timetable for his return, but with Carl Crawford himself admitting that the tear is pretty bad, it doesn't sound like this is going to be anything that's resolved quickly. Fortunately for the Dodgers, The outfield is one area where they have ample depth with Alec Guerrero, despite his lack of experience, has been seen some reps in left field in spring training, and I believe he got the start out there on Tuesday in left field. Scott Van Slyke also around, and the Dodgers also called up Kike Hernandez from AAA to further add to their depth. So, you know, despite this injury, I know the Brandon McCarthy thing was obviously more of a killer for the Dodgers than Carl Crawford is, but it will open up, you know, playing time for those that were, you know, holding on to guys like Scott Van Slyke and Guerrero, waiting for the opportunity to come about. It looks like this might be a blessing in disguise for those people.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially for Guerrero owners. I mean, yeah, I think those, you know, Van Slyke, Ethier, probably going to be in line for significant time as well. But also with Yasiel Puig out, I mean, right field's open. Carl Crawford, I mean, this is just bad. This is fifth DL stint in 4 years and a significant tear. I mean, don't want to speculate too much, but could be looking at several months on the shelf realistically. And yeah, Hernandez got the start, got called up, started in center field in place of Jock Peterson today, but that was really just because Madison Bumgarner was on the hill. Don't really see him as an option to play significantly moving forward. He actually may only be up for a couple days. They need to bring up a bullpen reinforcement. Guerrero is the major, you know, X factor here. His start tonight in left field was his first major league start in the outfield, but he's just been raking, absolutely raking. 24 plate appearances coming into tonight, second on the team in home runs, tied for second on the team in RBI. I think you have to find a way to get this guy in the lineup as soon as possible. And even if he proves to be only, you know, capable in left field, as long as he is capable, I think you have to throw him out there on a near everyday basis. And that's the case. I mean, owners have already been profiting, even with the limited playing time. Could really turn into a really nice option. You know, if he keeps this up, I mean, he's not going to keep up this pace, but I mean, he could look like a, you know, top 100 option if he were to work into regular playing time.
Yeah, the defensive rep certainly isn't good for Guerrero. A bit adventurous probably is a generous way to put it, but really don't have a lot of data to go off of him based in the outfield, so maybe that might be an area that he takes to better than third base, which where the reports were a little bit more negative. Probably will allow Juan Uribe to play every day. Not a guy that's really draws a lot of attention in the fantasy circles, but Don Mattingly, you know, remains committed to him just because of his strong defense at third base, even at the age of 36. But, you know, it's a boon all around for those that were stashing guys like Van Slyke, guys like Guerrero. Mm-hmm. And Van Slyke especially is interesting too to me and doesn't really get the love that a guy like Guerrero does, obviously with Guerrero justifiably so because he has the 5 home runs and 20-something at-bats. But Van Slyke was a monster against left-handed pitching last year, and you have to think that now because of this he'll at least be a fixture in the lineup anytime a lefty is starting for the opposition.
Yeah, I think definitely whenever a lefty is starting, but and you know, he kind of has this reputation that he's a guy who, you know, mashes lefties only. But you look at his career numbers for his career against right-handed pitching, he has a 798 OPS, 270 average, 343 on base, 455 slug, only 8 homers and 237 plate appearances. But I feel like, you know, he gets discounted a bit because they think, you know, this guy at best is a short end platoon guy. When realistically, if he were to play against some right handers, he could surprise some people and really put up nice numbers. I've been stashing him in our stake league, and you know, I think with some of the injuries in the outfield, numerous injuries, I'm gonna, you know, deploy him and be happy with that kind of fill in production. While Crawford's out, I think he should be in line for, you know, at least 4 to 5 starts per week.
It's obviously not ideal for the Dodgers to lose a guy like Carl Crawford, but at the same time, they do seem to have ample insurance options on hand. Same cannot be said for the rotation, and dealt a little bit more worse news, not obviously on the caliber of, you know, a season-ending Tommy John surgery for one of their pitchers, but Hyunjin Ryu, who is kind of expected generally, I think, to return within the next week or two. Sounds like the Dodgers are a little less pessimistic about his timetable. It was reported on Tuesday that he's likely at least a month away from returning to the Dodgers, kind of highlighting a late May or early June return for him. That's going to make a really tough task for the Dodgers to fill out that rotation with McCarthy spot absent and Ryu spot absent. Brett Anderson, not really a guy that you want to depend on as your third starter given his health track record, but, you know, opportunity will open up for other pitchers because of this. I think Scott Baker has pretty much solidified a spot for the at least the next one or two turns in the rotation just because of McCarthy's injury. He was already with the big club. Kind of hard to figure out who might get that last, that fifth spot. A lot of options to choose from. Carlos Frias, I know, is on the Dodgers right now as a lawn man, but they could drip, you know, go into the Triple A ranks and pluck a guy like Joe Wieland, who's been performing well. Somebody like Zach Lee, too, might also get consideration. So tough to predict where the Dodgers might go with this one.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think those names you threw out are probably the top options. You know, I think some people, you know, mistakenly probably threw out Julio Urias' name as an option. He did fan 10 yesterday in an outing with Double A Tulsa, but just 20 years old. Don't think they're, you know, even with their team really an organization in a win now mode, not going to make that move, even though, you know, we could be looking at Fernando Mania part two if he were to get called up. I mean, Urias is an insane young talent. Would love to see him get a chance, but they have Brandon McCarthy working, or I'm sorry, Brandon Beachy working his way back from Tommy John surgery. Probably looking at a return sometime in June. He'll help bolster the rotation, but I really think that, you know, a trade could be imminent. I mean, if they, you know, if looking at Ryu out for another month at least, I don't think any of those guys you mentioned would really be great, you know, stopgaps there. I mean, there'd be somebody you could rely on for a spot start here and there, but not somebody you want to entrust with a rotation spot full time. Of course, Cole Hamill's name has been thrown around. How about Johnny Cueto? I mean, I don't think the Reds are willing to dump him yet, but and I don't think the Dodgers are willing to part with a guy like Corey Seager or any of their top options. But if they were to package maybe Grant Holmes, Alex Guerrero, I think they'd probably get it done.
Yeah, I know that I'm sure any talk with Cole Hamels probably centers around getting Corey Seager to go their way. So that might end up tabling those talks. But this is just kind of, you know, pie in the sky dreaming stuff right now. I think the Dodgers, like you said, are looking for probably for more than a stopgap solution, which is what a guy like, you know, Scott Baker, Carlos Frias would be, especially with a team that's really built to contend this year. They don't really have, you know, the room to take half measures here. They kind of have to go all out just to ensure that they are able to secure, you know, the top spot in the NL West, which really seems their destiny. But it's looking a little bit dicey with all these injuries. And, you know, Ryu, we're just speculating that he'll be back in late May or early June. Now, it's possible that this, you know, is something that lingers and maybe even keeps him out till the All-Star break.
Yeah, you can't guarantee or really bank on him making it back in a month, at least a month. So with the injuries they've already had, if they were to suffer another injury, I mean, we're talking about you know, a team that would be kind of on its last legs as far as starting pitching goes. Brett Anderson couldn't make it out of the fifth inning yesterday. Picked him up for a spot start in NL only, and that really kind of bummed me out. But, you know, he's somebody who you ideally have, you know, at the back of your rotation. Him filling, you know, a number three spot right now, pretty troubling. I think, you know, it right now seems like a hard time to get a deal done. I mean, I know some teams like the Reds still have hopes of competing this year. I think the Phillies would be willing to move Hamels, but at the same time, their asking price has been so high throughout the offseason and spring training. Hard to imagine them, you know, finally coming to terms and really lowering that price enough to where Seager would not have to be included.
Yeah, that second wild card spot really keeps a lot of teams in contention and maybe less willing to, you know, pump the brakes on their season and sell off spare parts. So Dodgers might have to wait a while if they are to make a move. But starting rotation is not the extent of their injury troubles. Of course, Kenley Jansen has been out all season with a foot injury. But good news on that front, actually. He's expected to begin a rehab assignment at High A Rancho Cucamonga on Friday. He cleared a major hurdle on Tuesday by throwing to live hitters for the first time since having surgery. And the rehab assignment might represent the final step before Jansen is ready to return to that closing role. Seems like the Dodgers have been leaning on Yimi Garcia in that role of late, but really hasn't, you know, had enough appearances to build up probably security in that role. And given what Jansen was able to do in previous years, you have to think that once, if his rehab assignment goes accordingly, he's going to be plugged right back into that closer's role.
Yeah, without question, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, they've been targeting mid-May for him as far as him getting back onto the active roster. It looks like he may even beat that. You know, if he starts the rehab assignment Friday as expected, you know, I could be looking at, you know, a week to 10 days before he's back on the field. And I do think he'd immediately step in. Yimi Garcia has been impressive. really impressive. 0.84 ERA. His FIP's actually even lower at 0.55. You know, the strikeouts have been through the roof. 45% strikeout rate, just a 7.5% walk rate. Swinging strike rate well above average at 15%. He's a guy that I feel like, you know, even if he only gets you a week or two of saves in the meantime before Jansen returns, he's somebody who could still be of some value even if when he gets bumped down the pecking order in deeper mixers and in only leagues, because his contributions to the ratio categories and in strikeouts, I think he could be a premier middle reliever this season. I really like what I'm seeing. I mean, the fastball velocity is up a little bit more than a mile an hour for last year. And, you know, mixing that fastball with the slider and the change, I mean, he's got everything working right now. So I think he's somebody that, you know, you're not going to trade for, but if you can go out and pick him up right now, if somebody, you know, sees that Jansen's looming, cuts bait, you may want to go grab him, because he's a guy who you can plug in when some of your starters are hurt, and he's not going to kill you anywhere.
Very valid point, and absolutely, I think the same thing. Guys like that in middle relief that don't have that role are so often overlooked, and it's really good anytime you can find an elite guy, potentially like Garcia has proven to be thus far. Really nothing to suggest that he's going to not, you know, continue to strike guys out at a rapid rate. It's kind of been his track record, really, coming through the minors. So a lot to like about that overall profile, even if he does lose that role. Carlos Gomez is hoping to return to the DL, return from the DL on Saturday in Chicago. Looks like he won't really miss much more beyond the 15-day minimum due to that hamstring injury. But at this point for the Brewers, it really doesn't matter if a guy like that is back in their lineup. This team, you know, is pretty much dead in the water as it is. But at the same time, for fantasy owners, having a guy like Gomez back in the lineup should be helpful, even if his run totals, you know, probably aren't going to be as high as you thought coming into the year, given the poor quality of this lineup.
Yeah, it'll be nice for fantasy owners to have him back. But, yeah, already really too late for him to save the Brewers. With the loss tonight, dropped to 4-17. I mean, this... you know, I'm a Reds fan, but it's almost hard to see all the Brewers fans around me already, you know, giving up, and just the level of disgust with this team. You know, after Braun requested some days off, people were pretty furious about that, and I understand why. I mean, Gomez, he's somebody that, you know, he's going to come back and you're going to plug in right away. But I also, you know, had some conversations. I mean, this is just purely speculative, but, you know, if the Brewers were to start, you know, blowing things up a little bit, who's their most valuable asset to trade? And it's got to be Gomez, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know Jonathan Lucroy was another name that somebody was throwing around, but his contract's too good to justify giving him up. Gomez, you could probably say the same thing about, but, you know, the fact of the matter is you just can't package a guy like that, I think, unless you're getting, you know, a Godfather offer to make that happen. Mm. What the Brewers really need to do is just get you know, a nice infusion of talent at the upper levels of the minors. Right now, their system's pretty much concentrated with guys at the lower levels that are regarded as their better prospects. And until that happens, you know, they're really not a team that I view as that's going to be, you know, a contender in the NL Central, which profiles as one of the better divisions, I think, for years to come, with perennial threats like the Cardinals, Pirates, obviously up and coming the next 2 years. Or the last 2 years, and the Cubs certainly have shown this year with the arrival of guys like Chris Bryant and Addison Russell that they are going to be players for the future. So until the Brewers are able to score some, you know, better drafts, I think that they're going to be floating at the bottom of this division.
Yeah, and we talked about before we came on, not a great draft class this year, so it's tough for them. And, you know, I was talking with Derek Van Riper about this, about them possibly, you know, if they had to bite the bullet and trade Gomez. You know, Juan Lagares, do you think the Mets would maybe package Lagares and an arm for Gomez? I don't know. I know they love Lagares. Obviously, the defense in center field is gold glove caliber, won the gold glove last year. But do you think that that's something that the Mets would consider?
I don't think so. I mean, Gomez actually did come up with the Mets before he was traded to the Twins as part of that Johan Santana deal way back when. But I really think, like you said, that they're just too enamored with Lagares and really believe that he could be a star potentially. I know he doesn't obviously have the hit tool that Gomez does, but it is coming around. He's gradually improving in every facet of the game, already a gold glove caliber center fielder. So I don't know if that's an area that they necessarily are looking to improve. I think if they are, potentially targeting help somewhere, they might do it in one of the corner outfield spots.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I guess Gomez could probably, you know, he could play obviously the corners as well, but I think that, yeah, the price would probably be too high. They could probably get somebody they could plug in there, maybe as a fourth outfielder type, who be an upgrade over Kirk Nieuwenhuis, give him some offensive pop. But for Milwaukee, you know, Clint Coulter coming up through the system, former catcher, has looked pretty good so far this year, but really not a lot of help on the horizon for them. I mean, Orlando Arcia, Tyrone Taylor, Monty Harrison, decent players, but a ways off. And Cody Medeiros, a top pick in last year's draft, I think he just turned 20 recently. Not, you know, it's the future is bleak for them right now, but they do have some talent to where maybe 2018, 19, they can compete again. But it's going to be a long road to rebuild this Brewers club.
Future is also looking pretty bleak for Dominic Brown, actually activated from the disabled list. An Achilles injury during spring training kept him out all year. But fresh off his activation, the Phillies actually optioned him to AAA Lehigh Valley. Didn't have a great rehab assignment, posted just four singles and a double during 36 at-bats. That's a 139 batting average. It just continues to get worse for Dominic Brown, who is just awful last season after that 27-homer campaign. So tough to see him, you know, getting back to being, you know, an even useful outfielder for the Phillies.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that 2013 season was nice, but it was really kind of inflated by that 1 month. I think it was May where he hit like, you know, 12 homers or something. So really fluky, but tough to see still that he's, you know, now down at AAA again, struggling down there. Maybe when he gets healthy, he could find some room, but they seem content to, you know, go with the guys they have right now, Jeff Francoeur and, you know, Grady Sizemore and others. You know, not a competitive team by any stretch, but you got to think that, you know, and it's really telling that the fact that this outfield is so porous and Dominic Brown still can't crack it. I think you're right that the future is bleak for him as well. Maybe time for a change of scenery, but even then, hard to imagine him, you know, making an impact this year. I think he should probably be unowned in really all formats.
Even NL only?
I would say so. Just because, yeah, who knows when he's going to be up, and on that team, the upside is very limited.
Yeah, it's just that quote right there just illustrates just how far that he's fallen in these last 2 years, and really tough to see. But we'll run through a couple more minor notes before moving on to some of the games. Mike Napoli was held out of Tuesday's lineup with an illness and is expected to miss a few more games as a result. But fortunately, the Red Sox did get Pablo Sandoval back in action Tuesday. He was forced to leave Monday's game after a bout of whiplash after making a diving catch seemed to hurt his neck, but it looks like he's going to be okay. Anthony Rendon, who me and DVR talked about yesterday, was scratched from his rehab outing at AA Harrisburg with stiffness. Looks to be on track to get back in action on Tuesday, so it doesn't seem like the minor setback that he dealt with will lengthen his timetable or anything at all. Jesse Hahn missed his previous start due to a blister on his hand, has been cleared to start Wednesday, so he's good to go against the Angels, matching up against Matt Shoemaker, who is going to be returning from personal leave. Greg Holland of the Royals threw 15 pitches off a mound as part of a bullpen session on Tuesday. He's been battling a pec strain, but the fact that he's throwing again suggests that he might not be too far off of a return, might not even need a rehab assignment before the Royals decide to activate him. And one more news for your Cincinnati Reds, Clay. Obviously dealt a big blow with the loss of Homer Bailey, but looks like one of their top prospects, Mike Lorenzen, could take his spot in the rotation.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Lorenzen. He's been very good at AAA thus far. And they're actually going to start him on Wednesday and move Mike Leake back to Thursday. I did see, you know, we were going through the DraftKings player pool that they still had Leake, so be sure to avoid him in that game. He's not going to be starting against Milwaukee on Wednesday. Going to get a pretty nice matchup, though, on Thursday in the Atlanta Braves, so not too bad for his owners. You know, with Lorenzen, I'm pretty excited. Yeah, Leake or Homer Bailey, his future completely up in the air right now, at least for the rest of this season. But I think Lorenzen, he's also a guy that I was looking for in a Yahoo league, and he wasn't even in the player universe. So, I mean, you may have to use a waiver claim on him, but I think in NL only, he should be owned, just given that I think he will be able to hold down this rotation spot. Got a text from my buddy who was wondering, you know, what do you feel worse about, Homer Bailey's remaining money, $59 million or something remaining on his deal, or the 30-plus remaining on Dat Dude's deal and really wasn't sure, but I think Dat Dude may be a little worse as far as the money owed to him. Hopefully Bailey can come back and pitch well starting next season, but at the same time, I wish they'd kind of use that money to lock up Johnny Cueto long-term.
Yeah, there are some financial concerns with the way that the Reds have their money distributed around their core players, but if nothing else, Bailey's injury will allow Reds fans to kind of take a look at one of their premier prospects in Lorenzen, so that should at least provide some cushion to the blow of Bailey's loss. RotoWire listeners are winning serious money at DraftKings.com. Baseball season is heating up, and you too could be winning serious cash. You need to check out DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-day fantasy sports site. Use the promo code DVR when you deposit for a free contest entry today. Clay, there's 5 early games. The rest are distributed among the late slate. What's one starting pitcher that you have your eye on for that?
I actually took a look at the early slate.
Oh, the early slate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. It was only, 5 games
yes.
in the early slate. Yeah. So I like Shane Green. I mean, look, he was clobbered for 8 earned runs last time. I completely get it. But he's the cheapest starting pitcher available in the early slate. And I think that's an overcorrection. I mean, yeah, the 8 earned runs is tough, but he was so good his first 3 times out. And he's going up against Minnesota. I mean, it's at Minnesota. Gave up just 4 hits over 8 scoreless innings. He did allow 1 unearned run, but and 1 walk against Minnesota in his debut. Twins have the second worst team OPS in baseball coming into Tuesday's action, only better than the Phillies, tied with Milwaukee at a 6-12 combined mark. Again, I think that the price reduction, overreaction, overcompensating for that one poor outing, take advantage now because, again, I mean, I've liked what I've seen through the first 3 starts, and I know Paul Spohr is still pumping him up hard. I mean, I respect Paul's opinion on starting pitching more than, pretty much anyone's. And he's a guy that he said after Green's last start, seriously, now is the time to go out and buy low on Green, get him while you can, because I think people, they get these Yahoo notifications, Shane Green has been dropped in thousands of Yahoo leagues. So why don't you do it? No, don't do that. And in daily, I think he makes for a nice option. Go give him a role, especially in tournament plays, because I do think his ownership will be pretty low.
He will be opposing Phil Hughes, so maybe that might make the win a little bit more difficult. But for sure, I think he is going to be a good value option. I don't really see the Twins dominating him like the Indians did the last time out. And I especially like him, like you said, in season long league still. I think maybe what his ERA currently sits at 3, I don't know if he'll be in the low 3s, but I think something like 3.50 might be reasonable to expect the rest of the way from somebody like Shane Green. Doesn't make a lot of bats miss, or at least he hasn't this year, but does keep the ball on the ground and does have the skill set that's necessary toward succeeding. So definitely don't be too alarmed by that poor outing last week.
Yeah, I mean, the strikeout rate's not really going to tick up much, I don't think, at all. Currently sitting, well, it will tick up somewhat. It's at 11.8 right now. It's going to tick up some, but not a whole lot, all right? I'll admit that. The swing strike rate is just at 8.2%. Not a lot of swings and misses. His fastball velocity has been down from last season, but he does get a lot of movement on his pitches, and I think, that you look at the ERA 3.00, but the FIP is actually even lower, 3 points lower at 2.97. I think that's indicative of, even with the poor outing, how well he's truly pitched to this point. Really good with the control, and I think that's going to be able to, he's going to be able to sustain that success given those control, his ability to control the strike zone.
So Green makes for a good starting pitching option for the early slate. There's 2 guys that I'm eyeing for the late night slate, 2 NL Central pitchers. Carlos Martinez of the Cardinals is the first. He's available for $7,700 versus the Phillies. I believe he's the 7th most expensive in the late slate. And I recommended a couple of the Phillies left-handed batters a while ago, but as a whole, the Phillies have been absolutely atrocious against right-handed pitching this year. Generally, the statistic I like to use to evaluate the performance of teams in daily play is WOBA, weighted on base average. The Phillies rank 30th in the league in that regard with a 255 weighted on base against right-handed pitching, worst in the league. And I think that's something that Martinez can take advantage of. Of course, he's been pretty great all season. 1.35 ERA, 0.90 WHIP, 21-7 K to BB ratio entering play on Wednesday. One of his blemishes, though, has been the long ball. He has given up 3 home runs, but he's also been superb against right-handers in his career with the 5.99 OPS. And given the Phillies' struggles, I think that there's plenty of room for him to take advantage. Fortunately for him, too, the Phillies have only homered 9 times off righties this season. That's 26th in baseball. So with Martinez, I think there's plenty of profit potential. Same goes for Kyle Hendricks of the Cubs. He's available for $6,700 against the Pirates. If you're using both of those pitchers to round out your lineup, I think that's the way to go. That's probably the way that I would go for here. I know Hendricks faced the Pirates only 5 days ago and didn't really have an overly impressive outing. Went 5 1/3 innings, gave up 3 runs, 5 hits, 2 Ks, no walks. But what really intrigues me with Hendricks is how brilliant his control has been all year. Only 1 walk so far, but his downfall has been giving up 2 homers during those outings. But really, that's not something that you can expect from him going forward. He only gave up 4 in 80 innings last year. His ability to induce weak contact and keep the ball on the ground is a real skill. And I think that he is going to take advantage of a Pirates lineup that's kind of underachieved to date. You really don't think of them as an underachieving offense, but they rank 26th in WOBA. They're last in walk rate, and they're in the bottom third of the league in terms of striking out the most, and might also be missing one of their better left-handed bats to counter the right-handed Hendricks in Gregory Polanco, who remains sidelined with a groin injury. So, you know, just as a cheap play to round up your lineup, I think Hendricks makes for a good pairing with Martinez.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I love Hendricks. I think I recommended him against these Pirates last time, maybe not. Maybe it was with Jake. I'm not entirely sure, but I'm with you that he makes for an outstanding play. And you're right that the home runs, the 2 home runs are pretty fluky because you mentioned the weak contact, 10.2% line drive rate, and the ground ball rate over 50%. I think that's going to stabilize. And yeah, it was great at keeping the ball in the park last time or last season. I think, you know, he actually is one of my favorite, you know, kind of sleeper options coming into the year. And somebody who I think, you know, given the control, is a great like whip asset. You know, he's not going to kill you in whip. May have a few, you know, rough outings. Maybe the ERA isn't, you know, outstanding. Maybe, you know, around 3-5 range, like maybe with Green at the end of the year. But the whip contributions are what I really like with Hendricks. And I think, you know, he showed he can strike guys out. Had 8 strikeouts in a game earlier this season. I think those could tick up over the course of the year. And Martinez, I mean, I really like what he's doing. And it's crazy that the Phillies are 30th in weighted on base, despite the fact that they trot out, you know, 6 lefty bats in the lineup pretty much every day. It just goes to show you how futile those lefty bats really are.
Yeah, and I don't really expect it to get a whole lot better considering how that lineup is constructed. We mentioned that Dom Brown can't even crack it, but you're still rolling out Jeff Francoeur and Grady Sizemore in right field. So that just kind of emphasizes the state of that Phillies offense. So Clay, you're pumping up Shane Green for that early slate of games. Is there a particular lineup stack that you like for that early game slate?
Yeah, I do. I like the Padres stack against Dallas Keuchel. I mean, Keuchel's been through the roof so far. Outstanding. ERA and WHIP both below 1 right now. But I think it's time for some regression here. I mean, the Padres, tough matchup for him as a lefty, have the best team OPS against left-handed pitching and by a pretty significant margin. Combined 916 OPS. Next up is the Yankees at an 850 mark. It's not really surprising either, given just how many right-handers they have in their lineup. Jed Jerko has played once out of the past 7 games, but manager Bud Black did suggest he's going to be in there against the lefty, and it sounds like he's going to be a short-end platoon guy, realistically, for the time being. He's cheap at 3,400. May want to give him a roll. Will Middlebrook's 3,300 to get 2 of those cheaper right-handed bats in there allow you to stack up with Matt Kemp, Justin Upton. Kemp's price definitely creeping up there, $4,800, but he's been great. He's stealing the bases as well. I think you give him a roll, you give Justin Upton a roll. Derek Norris, 3,600. He may be in line for a day off, but if he's in there, really nice price for him. Will Myers, 3,900. You got to mix and match. Obviously, you can't have all those guys, but I think, you know, you pick 4 of them and pair them up with a guy like Shane Green, a cheap option, and you're gonna do pretty well.
Does the fact that the game's at Petco Park worry you a bit, or do you think it's reflected enough in the DraftKings price with the discount that it makes those options that you suggested worth rolling?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of built in to a certain extent, but also, you know, with the Padres, you know, you're going to be surprised if you get a lot of power. I mean, you look at the lineup and you see a lot of power, but at Petco, you know, you're not really banking on them hitting a lot of homers. You're banking on them, you know, manufacturing runs in that big park with doubles, extra base hits, as many as you can. And I think, you know, while Keuchel's been great, again, how good they are against left-handed pitching, you know, worries me about him in this one. I think the Padres going to have success against them. And, you know, even if they put up six against them, we'll probably still have an ERA under two for the season. So I'm not worried about him long-term, but I think this is the one where, you know, there's a kind of equalizing start here. He brings his numbers back down to earth.
Clay, let's go ahead and take a look at some of the games from Tuesday night. One game that wasn't played was the White Sox-Orioles. Continues to be a lot of unrest in the Baltimore area with protests and riots. That series was postponed for a second straight night. Sounds like they are going to play Wednesday, but in front of an empty crowd for one of the first times in pro sports history, I think, in North America, where that's even taken place.
An empty arena match? That's a WWE thing.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I had heard something about that, but I didn't know that they were actually going to go through with that.
Yeah, that's the plan for now. And in addition to that, they're also scheduled to host the Rays this weekend. That series is actually going to be played in Tampa, but the Orioles are going to be labeled as the home team, which is another weird occurrence. It sounds like the Rays are going to do away with anything that's promoting the Rays as the home team, but you have to think that the Trop is going to be probably 60% Rays fans because you have to downgrade it naturally because it's Tampa Bay. But at the same time, it's hardly a home series for the Orioles.
Yeah, strange situation. You know, tough to see from a distance. You know, not really sure, you know, what all is going on there. But obviously, you know, the Rays expressed that they didn't feel safe going to Baltimore this weekend. So probably a good thing that they're having it in Tampa, even though for the Orioles, definitely less than ideal.
Let's take a look at the Toronto-Boston game to start things out. A lot of offense in this one. The Jays ended up as 11-8 winners here. Both of the starting pitchers got blown up here. Clay Buchholz, off to a promising start to the year, hit some traction right here on Tuesday. Gave up 5 runs, 4 earned, over 2 2/3 innings on 6 hits, 1 walk, struck out 4. On the other side, Drew Hutchinson, touted as a lot of people as a sleeper candidate this last year after posted one of the higher strikeout rates in all of the second half. Gave up six runs on 9 hits and 5 walks. Didn't strike out a single batter over 4 innings. Hutchinson's ERA is now at 6.67. Clay, are you starting to get worried about him?
Oh, big time. I mean, he was a guy that I thought, you know, he's had some pretty juicy matchups. This one not great against Boston, obviously a good offense, but he had a matchup against Atlanta recently and another kind of a cake matchup that he just did not come through and perform well in. The big thing for me here is the 0 strikeouts and 5 walks. I mean, that's a really telling sign. I know some people even had him as a dark horse Cy Young candidate coming out of the AL. And, you know, I don't think his rotation spot's in jeopardy by any means. They can't really afford to even consider that. But at the same time, I'm worried about him. I think I may, you know, sit him down if I can. If I'm in a 12 to 15 teamer and I have other options, maybe even go with a middle reliever ratio play in the meantime, just because I think you have to pump the brakes and really wait and see on Hutchinson until he starts showing some more encouraging signs. Good to see Marco Estrada come in, pitch 3 scoreless innings to keep the Blue Jays in this one. 0.84 ERA. You know, I thought the Brewers kind of fleeced him when they got Adam Lind for him, but he is, you know, really kind of doing well in the bullpen right now.
Yeah, and you have to think that he'll be first in line if any opening in the rotation does come about. Also notable in this game was Brett Cecil getting the save. Like we mentioned earlier, was deployed as the closer, came away with the first save of the season, gave up a hit but did strike out a batter in a relatively clean ninth inning. Also nice to see Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion get off the schneid to a degree. Bautista went 2 for 4 with his 5th homer of the season, drove in 3 runs. Encarnacion 2 for 5 with 2 RBI. Josh Donaldson also continued his dominance from the 2-hole, going 3 for 5 with 3 runs scored, 2 RBI. Some of that damage coming in the 9th inning with a home run. And Devin Travis continues to excel at the top of the order, 1 for 5 with a walk, an RBI, two runs scored. He's got 19 RBIs already, despite not batting in a prominent spot in the middle of the lineup.
Yeah, I'm really shocked by this. I mean, I knew that he could, you know, step in and make an impact, but I did not expect the kind of power, run producing he's shown so far. Oh, man. I mean, I actually thought Dalton Pompey would make more of an impact, but he's kind of been quiet. I mean, he hasn't really done much. Travis, I think, you know, with Reyes out, he's going to probably occupy that top spot and really be a nice option in all formats. I mean, run scored. You know, maybe the RBIs are going to tail off, but somebody who in all formats should probably be owned and starting realistically, just given, you know, at second base, he's probably been a top 4 or 5 option at second base, maybe even higher to this point. But on the other side, for Boston, Hanram, another homer. He's got 9 already. That's amazing to me. You know, left field has been an adventure, but, you know, not getting in his head at all at the plate.
No, and I was kind of pessimistic. I actually chose not to keep him in our staff league just because I thought the price didn't reflect his future production. But he's pleasantly proven me wrong. I guess I do own him in another league, so I haven't fully gotten rid of him entirely. But good to see him at least kind of noticing some rejuvenation in Boston. Pablo Sandoval, as we mentioned, also returning to the lineup on Tuesday after leaving Monday's game with a neck injury. Didn't really look like he had any rust. Went 4 for 5 with 2 runs scored, 2 of those doubles coming off Drew Hutchinson. Really been a nice piece in the middle of the lineup for Boston.
Yeah, and you know what I'm interested in? I mean, Daniel Nava starting at first base for Napoli, who's been out and might miss a few more days, as you said earlier. And Brock Holt starting in right. I want to know, with Shane Victorino out and Rusne Castillo, you know, probably going to get back on the field with AAA Pawtucket here before the end of the week. How much longer is it going to be before we see him? I think, you know, they probably want him to log at least a week or so of regular at-bats before bringing him up, but I could really see him filling an everyday role by mid-May. What do you think?
For Rusne, yeah, I think that's something that's realistic, but he might still need to have some help on the injury front in order for that to materialize. Certainly helps with a guy as fragile as Victorino, already experiencing an injury that might, you know, help his cause. But I'm thinking that he is going to need, you know, a good amount of at-bats in the minors before the Red Sox would probably tinker with their outfield.
You're probably right. And I'm just probably antsy as an owner in several leagues. But I remember him coming off that oblique injury in spring training. First at-bat back, he goes yard. Hopefully it's a similar case this time around where he steps right back in and, you know, hasn't missed a beat, is able to, you know, swing it and produce right away. That's my hope anyway. But in the meantime, I mean, they're so dead set on Brock Holt, but I think, you know, once Mike Napoli returns the first, it'll probably be primarily Nava and Alan Craig over there in right for the meantime. Maybe Holt mixed in some against right-handers.
Move on to the Royals and Indians game. Trevor Bauer has been an early success story this season. Was okay tonight, but nothing exceptional, really. 6 innings, 3 runs allowed, only struck out 2 batters, but did only walk 2. So it's at least encouraging if he's not getting the strikeouts that his control is in place there for the Indians. But it was not him that would come away with the win. The Royals ended up winning this one 11-5. A lot of offense attacking the bullpens, really, in this one. Brandon Moss went 2 for 4 with the Indians for a home run, his 4th of the year, and 3 RBI. Doing the damage on the Royals side was Kendrys Morales, went three for five with 4 runs scored, 3 RBI, and his 3rd home run of the season. He's been a pleasant surprise for the Royals. I really did not expect much from him thus far, and he's batting .321 already.
Yeah, pretty crazy. I mean, Billy Butler's been good over there in Oakland, but I mean, you consider the price difference here between, you know, Billy Butler, I think it was 3 years, $30 million. Morales, just a cheap, I think it was a cheap 1-year deal. I mean, really nice option for them. Middle of the order, stabilize that, and really haven't missed a beat in terms of production, so that's nice to see. Also really nice to see Alex Gordon hit his 3rd homer of the year. Had some concerns about the, you know, some weakness in that surgically repaired wrist, but seems like he's definitely, you know, rebuilding that strength, and his ability to hit him out of the park definitely bodes well. Don't know if they may still continue to sit him for day games after night games for the time being, but it seems like, you know, eventually those restrictions will be lifted.
Just looking at that Royals lineup right now, you got 6 hitters tonight that are batting 290 or above. really not a team that was regarded as anything special offensively last year. Kind of got to the World Series based on the strength of their pitching. But do you think we're seeing legitimate growth from a lot of these players here, or is there a lot of regression that's due to come for guys like Mike Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain, and Kendrys Morales that are off to these hot starts early on?
I think with Cain and Morales, there's going to be some regression. I mean, and with Moustakas, but I think Moustakas, I mean, his move up to the two hole, I mean, I think he's really regained quite a bit of confidence after a strong postseason run. Two more hits tonight, another RBI, now batting .346. If he's able to stay in that prominent spot in the order, continue hitting like this, I mean, he's probably going to have some slumps, like any player. But if he's able to maintain this spot, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's not only in AL only, but in mixers, somebody who's going to return nice value, especially given just how cheap he was going in auctions and drafts.
Take a look at the Yankees and Rays game. We mentioned earlier that Chase Whitley was getting the spot start here and came through pretty successfully. Ended up picking up his first win of the year, gave up just one run over five innings, struck out five, and allowed six hits. Really got some strong work in middle relief from Esmil Rogers. Ended up going 2 2/3 innings, throwing 38 pitches, didn't allow a single run, and struck out five. The fact that he got that many innings might be a sign that they're trying to stretch him out in anticipation of him filling Masahiro Tanaka's spot, but that's just speculation right now. With doesn't look like both Betances or Andrew Miller were available in this one, so it looks like the little-used Chris Martin got the save in relief for the Yankees, but I don't really know too much about him, but I don't really think this is anything that you're going to want to run to the waiver wire to add this guy for.
No, definitely not. It looks like, yeah, I mean, Betances and Miller have both been outstanding so far. Betances really, I mean, there were issues with his velocity in spring training, off to a pretty rough start to the season, but he's been outstanding the past week and a half, and I think he could end up seeing really pushing Miller into a true timeshare in that closer role before long, them kind of sharing those duties based on the matchups in the eighth and ninth. I think that's something Joe Girardi said that he was thinking about, and I think if Betances continues on this path, that he will force his hand. Yeah, you don't want to go out and get Martin, but it is good to see on the Yankees side good contributions from Chase and Shreve, Esmil Rogers, and Martin, all with ERAs under 2.75. So, I mean, nice to see that, especially given their issues in the starting rotation, that they're getting quality contributions from their bullpen arms.
And from the lineup on Tuesday, Jacoby Ellsbury, 3-for-4 in the leadoff spot, 2 stolen bases, 2 runs scored. The stolen bases were his 6th and 7th of the season. Even though he's kind of nearing the tail end of his prime, still an asset in stolen bases. I don't think we're ever going to see that peak power that he showed with the Red Sox. I think it was 2010, 2011 where he had the 30 homer season. But probably a guy that can give you around 10, maybe even 15 homers in that kind of park, and 30 steals. Pretty decent batting average, but the issue is just is he able to stay up for 162 games? But so far the early returns have been quite encouraging.
Yeah, definitely him and with Brett Gardner, his 6th steal of the season tonight. Both guys that top that order, I think are going to be nice, very nice contributors in the stolen base category. With the power with Ellsbury, I think he should crack double digits, but where he was going, it seems like, maybe his ADP dropped a bit in the later weeks of draft season, but he was going a bit too high for my liking. I did take him in the magazine mock just because I thought he was, a guy that if healthy, you could count on to contribute, but the if healthy thing is a big, big if, and somebody that has been healthy to this point, batting .308, 2 runs scored, but when you're an Ellsbury owner, you're just constantly, crossing your fingers and hoping. A bad slide in the second base or, him jumping out of the batter's box, he doesn't pull something as he's prone to do. But on the Rays side, Jake Odorizzi, not a great outing by any means tonight, 6 1/3, 4 earned runs, 9 hits, no walks, but only 4 Ks, 2.41 ERA, but the whip has been really good to this point, took a hit tonight, but he's somebody that, with Alex Colomay coming back this week and Drew Smyly back, he's a guy that, really has been an anchor for them and allowed them to weather this early storm.
I'm going to throw a couple of names at you along with Odorizzi that have just been some of the early season pitching surprises. Just kind of want to know which of these guys you think will return the most value rest of season? We'll go with Odorizzi, Shane Green, who you mentioned earlier, and Anthony DeSclafani. I know a guy near and dear to your heart as a Reds fan. Which of those three do you think has the highest potential the rest of the way?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I'd say, as much as it pains me to say it, I think DeSclafani probably has the lowest upside of that bunch. Off to a great start, don't get me wrong. And, you know, his last outing, 4 of the 5 runs against him, unearned. But at the same time, I think his stuff, based on the pure stuff, more of a fourth or fifth starter type of guy. Control's been good, but if that wavers at all in his coming starts, could be bad news. And, I mean, I just think, you know, on that team, the upside is not as great as some with some of these guys who, you know, the team context may be a bit more favorable. Between Odorizzi and Shane Green, I think I'm going to give the slight edge to Odorizzi. Shane Green, again, I like his stuff, electric stuff, but we saw that, you know, he's going to be prone to some blowups here and there. I think in the end the numbers will look fine, but I think Odorizzi is the kind of guy who is really, I mean, aside from his teammate Chris Archer, who's really, you know, taking that leap forward and being that true breakout star, I think he's kind of, you know, maybe been, you know, in the shadow a bit as far as Chris Archer goes. And he's somebody that people aren't talking about as much as they probably should. And after this start, you know, people may look at this and be willing to maybe move him, maybe test the waters.
And I think of that trio, I think the strikeout potential is greater with Odorizzi than the other two, which would probably give him the slight nod in my estimation. But all three guys certainly have been pretty good this far and don't really look like guys that are going to be headed for a major decline. So could bring tons of value the rest of the way. But probably the most entertaining game of the night, Clay, has been the Nationals and Braves games. Nationals and Braves game. The Braves actually led this one at 10-2 at one point, but just gave it away as the game went on, and doing a number against his old team was Dan Uglow, who came through with a 3-run homer in the 9th inning, finished the night 3-for-5, also tripled earlier, drove in five runs and scored twice. Heck of a game for Dan Uglow. This game pretty much represents the whole of his production over the last two seasons, it seems like.
That's very true. And I, you know, the Atlanta crowd kind of gave him a really hard time, booed him damn near out of the building, but it looks seems like it kind of lit a fire under him, came out and put up a 5 spot in the RBI column against his former team. And yeah, 2 triples now on the year for Ugla. Hashtag year of the triple. And I mean, there's not really much else you could say, but you know, Jason Grilli, blown save, his first, but it really came at a bad time when, you know, they really needed to hold on to this one. Drew Storen on the other side picked up the save, his 5th. This is a win that the Nationals really need to get going. Still 7-13, you know, even at this stage, I mean, that's a lot of ground to make up realistically. But getting this one back, hopefully, you know, allows them to, you know, gain some more confidence and come out and rattle off a series of wins here in a row.
Nationals effectively had to use 2 starting pitchers to replace Max Scherzer in this one. AJ Cole, one of their top prospects, getting the call, but he lasted just 2 innings, was just pounced on out of the gate, gave up 9 runs, only 4 were earned, but he did scatter 9 hits and a walk over 2 innings. So really nothing you can be too excited about, but better days are probably ahead for AJ Cole, even though he's probably demoted after this one, just because Max Scherzer doesn't look like he's going to miss much time. I say it was a tandem approach because Tanner Roark came on to pitch 3 innings in middle relief as the piggyback for Cole. A lot of people thought that he might get the nod here and effectively did to a certain extent, but he only lasted 3 innings and gave up 2 runs on 6 hits. So not a great showing from Tanner Roark, but fortunately the offense was able to bail them out. In addition to Ugla's exploits, Denard Span had a nice game at the top of the order, 5-for-6 with 4 runs scored and an RBI. Jose Lobaton also stepped in for Wilson Ramos, went 3-for-4 with 3 RBIs and 3 runs. So not necessarily the stars that were getting it done for the Nationals tonight.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, Harper 1-for-4. But yeah, Lobaton 3-for-4 with 3 runs scored, 3 RBI. Those are the kind of contributions they're going to need from guys like that in the short term until they get a guy like Anthony Rendon back to stabilize this lineup. I still think long term, I mean, you look at this team top to bottom, hard to imagine that they're, you know, this far under 500 already right now, 6 games under 500, but even with the win tonight. But I think with that starting rotation, everything else they have, that they're still easily the favorites. Well, maybe I still think they're the favorites in the NL East, but you look at the Mets, and they've been outstanding. Even at this point, it's fair to wonder if maybe the Mets, you know, relegate the Nationals to a wild card spot. It's
certainly possible, just given how much ground the Nationals now have to make up with the Mets' hot start to the season. Braves have also been surprisingly competitive in the early going, 10-10. I think we're both pegging them to regress from that 500 record, but getting good contributions from guys that were generally cast off. Chief of those was AJ Pierzynski. He went 4-for-4 tonight with 4 RBIs to raise his average to .439. It seemed like he was just going to be a mentor for Christian Betancourt this year, but has really taken over that starting catching job.
Yeah, I think they really need his offense, and Betancourt's, you know, .147 average right now. He's just, you know, defensively, he's outstanding. He's one of the best already behind the plate, but when you have this team that's really scrapping for runs, really trying to eke out runs as much as they can. I mean, it may not seem like it after they put up 12 tonight, but a team that has been starved for runs recently after their hot first week. And yeah, Pierzynski has been really probably their offensive MVP to this point. I mean, I know Freddie Freeman realistically is. He had 4 hits as well tonight, but Pierzynski's a guy who you slot in into that cleanup spot, and he's been outstanding. He's had, I think he has 3 homers right now, and I do like that. You know, I give Freddie Gonzalez a lot of grief, but has moved Markakis atop the order now. It was using Eric Young Jr., Cameron Maben there, but that kind of stabilizes things, allows Freddie Freeman to move up from the cleanup spot. Wasn't really drawing a lot of walks early on this season. I think, you know, you get him up and out of that mindset of really having to force hits and you know, drive in runs, allow him to walk a bit more and play his style of offensive game.
A lot of people pan that Markakis signing, but he's sitting at a .440 OBP right now. So proving the doubters wrong. And AJ Pierzynski looking like a really solid pickup option in 2 catcher leagues. You could do a lot worse than him as your second catcher in most deep formats.
Yeah, I mean, I think he should be owned really in all only leagues and even in 12 to 14 mixers. I mean, with all the catcher injuries that we've had lately, Lou Croy, I mean, Devin Mesoraco, Travis d'Arnaud, he's somebody that you plug in. You may not have the sex appeal at his age of Kevin Plawecki, somebody like that, but I think Pierzynski is going to be more productive. At his age, I think he knows what he's trying to do at the plate, and plenty of opportunities there, plenty of opportunities to drive in runs as well.
That'll about do it, I think, for the Tuesday RotoWire Fantasy Baseball podcast powered by DraftKings.com. If you do have any questions that you'd like us to tackle in future episodes regarding strategies or specific players you want to hear about, let me or Clay know on Twitter. Again, Clay's at ClayWLink. I'm at WolfmanTweets. And you can also email into fantasybaseballpodcast@gmail.com with any questions. And again, if you listen to us on iTunes or Stitcher and can please rate and review the podcast, we really appreciate any and all feedback that we can get. Clay and Jake Litarski will be back with you tomorrow.